Today's broadcast was originally recorded on December 8th, 2025.
If you're building a car, developing a car that Joe Biden or Pete Buttigieg wanted you to build, I want the market to decide what kind of EV I should offer. What kind of vehicles do the American consumers want to buy? This rule will actually allow you to bring back the 1970s station wagon.
Oh, fantastic. And 1970s pollution again. Making America filthy again.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
It's going well.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. We are heard up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ in Cottage Grove on Queso and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Welcome to the show. Here is a montage. Do we have this set up already? A mashup, if you will, of some comments from Donald Trump. Some of them made in 2025, very recently, regarding the affordability crisis that so many Americans are currently facing, and some other comments of his made in 2024 when he was on the campaign trail last year hoping to become president. See if you can tell which is which.
Starting on day one, we will end inflation and make America affordable again.
But the word affordability is a Democrat scam.
One of my top priorities will be to quickly defeat inflation and make America affordable again.
I don't want to hear about the affordability.
We will make America affordable again. We're going to make it affordable again.
You know, there's this fake narrative that the Democrats talk about affordability. Affordability is a con job.
We will target everything from car affordability to housing affordability.
You know, this whole thing is, they use the word affordability. It's a Democrat hoax.
Is it? Is it a Democrat hoax this year? But last year was the most important thing you could do while you were running for president, I guess. So, yeah, after running on decreasing prices on day one, making America affordable again, Trump's now repeating over and over and over again that the word affordability is really, it's just a Democratic hoax, or a Democrat hoax, as he likes to say, whatever that means. All of that, by the way, on the heels of his previous campaign promises during his previous runs for the White House to also not touch Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security.
Don't touch Social Security. Don't touch Medicare, Medicaid. Just leave them alone.
We will not cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid benefits.
I'm not going to touch Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid.
So, I wonder if we should believe him. Desi Doyen, after what he said about affordability, do you think he meant that about Medicaid,
well,
Medicare,
gosh,
and Social Security?
Which one does he mean? It's so hard to tell, except when you look at his actual policies, in which case we can see, yeah, cut everything that actual average everyday Americans, working families actually rely on.
And in truth, you know, we get so distracted on a daily, sometimes hourly basis, minute-by-minute basis by our ridiculous sociopathic president and his absurd antics and his unspeakable corruption that, frankly, it is easy to lose sight of the relentlessly damaging effects of his simple, terrible policymaking decisions, if they can even be called that, and the increasingly high costs that Americans and, of course, the world are actually paying for them, even for policymaking decisions that Trump previously vowed that he would never make. So this is the case. From the cost of health insurance spiking for tens of millions of Americans now, young and old, just days from now, to the price that farmers and consumers are now paying thanks to Trump's ridiculous tariff policies, a tax on every American, to the increasing costs of electricity thanks to his ongoing reversal of sensible, often bipartisan U.S. policies that had lowered the cost of energy via cheaper, cleaner renewables and manufacturing incentives that had previously led to a spike in foreign investment in America's renewable energy manufacturing sector while keeping Americans safer with the mitigation of the worsening effects of climate change, all, by the way, while lowering costs for things like gasoline amid the clean energy transition. We will be joined momentarily by an expert in climate law and the push to get governments and automakers to clean up air pollution and climate warming emissions, even as Trump is undermining all of that. All of that because he either, I don't know, doesn't like wind turbines sullying the view at his golf resorts, and or he is just frankly deeply in the pockets of the fossil fuel industry. So we got a lot to get to today. So I'm unlikely to get to calls today, unfortunately, but my flagship station here in Los Angeles is in our critical year-end fund drive. At the end of a rough year with much needed improvements to our transmitter, I would really appreciate it. I would really like to ask our regular listeners in our Southern California listening area to help KPFK close the year strong with a donation. And if you're listening later via podcast or whatever, you can also donate at any time via kpfk.org. When you do, let them know that you are a Bradcast listener. If you are listening elsewhere and you would like to or are able to support whatever station or podcast outlet is helping you to hear the broadcast day in and day out, please consider supporting them as well. Almost all of us are community radio folks, volunteer folks, and really rely on your support. But I want to step through a number of those policy issues that I mentioned today that are just making costs higher and life worse for Americans thanks to the simple, bad, and yes, usually corrupt policy decisions that Donald Trump is making on a daily basis, which affect all of us in one way or another. Bad policy that too often right now, understandably, that gets overlooked simply because Trump is just so terrible and obnoxious and embarrassing and corrupt and ridiculous on a daily basis, the real effects of his actual policies too often get lost in the daily Trump storm of idiocy. So let's start with healthcare for a moment, given the price spike that that is set to affect pretty much every American as of the first of the new year. Whether you receive access to health care via the Affordable Care Act, also known as the ACA or Obamacare, or via Medicaid or Medicare, or even your employer's health insurance plan. Of course, Democrats have been fighting to raise awareness to the fact that Trump and the Republicans' so-called One Big Beautiful Bill Act passed without a single Democratic vote in either the House or the Senate over the summer, that it is about to spike healthcare prices for millions of Americans. It's why they refused to vote with Republicans to keep the government open for a record 43 days back in October and November. That was in response to the fact that the Trump GOP budget bill slashed about $1 trillion to Medicaid and about $350 billion in Affordable Care Act subsidies over the next 10 years, as we discussed in detail late last week on the show with healthcare reporter Alice Miranda Olsting, and also that Trump could give $1 trillion in tax cuts to mostly wealthy people and huge corporations. Those cuts, as Olsting explained, are also going to raise the cost for everyone, even if you don't get your health care via the Affordable Care Act, even if you receive health care insurance via your employer. Download that show for free with Alice Olsting at brandblog.com if you missed it last week. But a point that I've been trying to get across, since before passage of the Trump GOP budget bill over the summer, is that it is not just Medicaid and not just Obamacare and not just, yes, your employee health plan that will become more expensive or difficult to afford or qualify for. It is also Medicare that is being slashed by Trump's so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, even though Democrats have not done a particularly good job of making that clear at all. Because Trump's budget bill, it adds $2.5 trillion to the national debt via new annual deficit spending and tax cuts for wealthy people. And because of that, an Obama-era law that will kick in when budget bills increase the national deficit will actually slash Medicare by some $500 billion over the next 8 years. That begins in the fiscal 2026 year, which actually started on October 1, whether you have heard about that or not via your favorite news outlets or from Democrats who have otherwise focused largely on the ACA and Medicaid cuts and not to the cuts on Medicare. But they are there and they are very real because Trump has ballooned the national debt. And there are these are all costs that are right now going to increase living expenses for tens of millions of Americans, thanks to the erosion that is also about to happen to what? Social Security, another program that Trump promised not to touch, but he lied about, just like Medicare and Medicaid, whether you have heard about it or not. These are cuts that will decrease affordability, which is not a made-up word, for tens of millions of seniors. And guess what? Of all places, telling you about it today, talking about it today, I found this story at Fox News. At least they're talking about it in an article published on Monday by Martin O'Malley, the former commissioner of the Social Security Administration under Joe Biden. Yes, at Fox News, of all places. In an article headlined, "Trump broke his promise to protect a lifeline for 71 million Americans." Yeah, I know. Fox News, where O'Malley writes, "For Social Security, it has been a miserable year." He says, after Donald Trump unleashed Elon Musk and Doge on the Social Security Administration, the agency lost more staff in a shorter period of time than ever before in its 90-year history. Fortunately, public outcry and pushback from congressional Democrats saved Social Security from a 50% cut to staffing and the closure of scores of field offices, as Trump and his administration had announced back in March. So somehow those dedicated workers remaining at the Social Security Administration have managed to keep the agency running without missing a single monthly benefit payment. But we are not out of the woods yet, he notes. The agency has been gutted. Enormous damage has been done to customer service and to the agent's ability to process claims. Just as many are demanding that Trump's deep cuts to healthcare be restored, so too must Trump's deep cuts to Social Security be restored, as the two are inextricably linked. 64 million Medicare recipients, he notes, will see a reduction in their Social Security benefits in 2026 due to Trump's Medicare price hikes that will cut into their Social Security cost of living adjustments, or COLA, making life more expensive for seniors. This, writes O'Malley at Fox News, is the greatest erosion of Social Security COLA in nearly a decade and the first time that Medicare premiums exceeded $200 per month. With the Social Security Administration staffing, he says, now reduced to a 60-year low and baby boomers swelling the numbers of active beneficiaries to an all-time high, the agency is struggling badly. And the American people, he says, are paying the price. As the Trump administration claims that things have never been better, millions of Americans are having a very different experience. In fact, he says more people today now die waiting in line for their initial disability determination than at any time since President Dwight Eisenhower signed the disability portion of the act into law back in 1956. None of this, he says, had to happen. It was made to happen. As a candidate, Trump vowed all through the campaign that he would protect Social Security. Instead, he wrecked the program's customer service, took a chainsaw to its functions, and maligned its reputation with false claims of waste, fraud, and abuse. In a time of great political division, Social Security remains the most strongly supported program in America. In fact, 80% of Americans are concerned whether their Social Security will be available when they retire, and they want it to be strengthened, made better, not hacked to pieces, not privatized or liquidated, as is now beginning to happen with the erosion of its statutory cost of living adjustments that are not keeping up with the cuts to health care and the spike in prices, thanks to Trump and the Republicans. This is a democracy moment, writes O'Malley. Social Security should be a bipartisan issue. All Americans, Republicans, Democrats, and independents alike, need to come together to deliver on its promise of a secure retirement after a lifetime of hard work. I was at Fox News. But of course, coming together to fight to protect these programs is unlikely to happen unless Americans even realize what is happening to them. I suspect most of our listeners know that Obamacare subsidies have been slashed, that Medicaid has been gutted, but have no idea that Medicare is now facing a similar fate and that it is cutting into the cost of living for more than 70 million seniors on Social Security right now. That you had to learn about this via an opinion piece at Fox News, which I damn near guarantee you Fox's primetime lineup will not be talking about tonight. That is a scandal in and of itself, but it is not one of the Trump-related scandals that is, I guess, understandably, leading the news every minute of the day these days. But I thought you should know about it. Especially when it's Fox News telling you how Trump is breaking his promises to voters and making life worse and more expensive for Americans. And yes, that is continuing no matter how much Trump and his sycophants are hoping to gaslight you about all of it. Here's an example. Remember back in, I think it was late October or early November, the Trump administration, they told us amid desperate pleas from farmers at the time who had lost one of their biggest longstanding customers thanks to Trump's tariffs, that Donald Trump had completed a great deal with China to restart the purchases of American soybeans, among other things, from the U.S. after the U.S. had previously slapped huge tariffs on goods coming in from China, ultimately sending China down to Brazil and Argentina for all of its huge purchases of soybeans and other major ag products, leaving American farmers in the lurch with a gazillion tons of soybeans, especially and nobody to sell them to after Trump scared away the largest purchaser in the world. Remember that? Well, it turns out that great deal that Trump had made, that he bragged about making, that his henchmen told you that only a great deal maker like Donald Trump could possibly have made, well, that great deal may not have been quite as great as Trump told you that it was. Which is so weird. And not like Trump at all to lie, eh?
Sorry, I just had to laugh at that part.
Yeah, well. So, new data the Agriculture Department released in November, just after the reopening of the U.S. government, created after the longest shutdown in history, created serious doubts, that data, about whether China would really buy millions of bushels of American soybeans like the Trump administration had touted back in October, as AP reported last month on the heels of that October meeting between Donald Trump and Chinese leader Xi Jinping. Farmers, of course, rejoiced at the time after Trump announced that China was going to be buying some 25 million metric tons of soybeans. But, well, just like when they voted for Donald Trump, they were getting scammed yet again by the scammer in chief. The USDA report released after the government reopened showed that only two Chinese purchases of American soybeans since the summit in South Korea between Xi and Trump, just two purchases totaling 332,000 metric tons. That is, of course, well short of the 12 million metric tons that Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins said that China had agreed to purchase by this January. And of course, it is nowhere near the 25 million metric tons that she said that they would buy in each of the next 3 years. There have been a few more purchases since that November report, according to AP Today, but it's still only about one quarter of what administration officials had said that China had promised. Whether they had or not, we don't know, but that's what they claimed. And while American farmers were hopeful after Trump's remarks about his meeting with Xi that their biggest customer, China, would resume buying the crops, well, as it turns out, there is not much incentive for China to do that, to buy from America right now, because they have plenty of soybeans already on hand that they already bought from Brazil and other South American countries this year instead of us, as they had in the past, thanks to the tariffs. And the remaining tariffs that are still on these products ensure that U.S. soybeans remain more expensive than Brazilian beans. So why would they come to buy them in America? Quote, we are still not even close to what has been advertised from the U.S. in terms of what the agreement would have been, said CoBank's Tanner Emke, who is its lead economist for grains and oilseed last month, or what the agreement supposedly was, based on what the Trump administration had claimed, had told Americans. Beijing, at the time, had yet to confirm that any detailed soybean purchase agreement had been made, but only that the two sides had reached consensus, quote, consensus, on expanding trade in farm products at some point, somehow. Emke of CoBank said that even if China did promise to buy American soybeans, it may have only agreed to buy them if the price was attractive. At the time of this original report, just a few weeks ago, Trump said that his team spoke with Chinese officials and they assured the White House that they would be purchasing more soybeans. Sure, they did. But Trump didn't offer any details on how much they would be buying, likely because there was no such details to be had. Just Trump playing his supporters for rubes again, and in the bargain, costing farmers more money in unsold crops and, yes, raising your prices for everything else. Quote, they're in the process of doing not only a little bit, but they'll be doing a lot of soybean purchases, Trump told reporters at the time. Sure they will. That sounds legit. After his comments, by the way, the price of soybeans fell sharply when it came to the market, deciding that there was a lack of Chinese demand. The USDA data released at the time confirmed it, just like the last time that this genius dealmaker was in office and tanked the economy for American farmers. All of that At the same time that farmers are dealing with soaring costs of fertilizer, of seed, of equipment, of labor, and that is hurting their profits. That is thanks, of course, the labor part of that to, the others to Trump's tariffs, but also to the to Trump arresting or scaring away much-needed migrant farmers when it comes to the labor. Oh, oopsie-daisy. All of the costs are going up thanks to Donald Trump's policies. The Kentucky farmer who is president of the American Soybean Association, Caleb Ragland, has said that he worries that thousands of farmers could go out of business this year without significant Chinese purchases or government aid. Yes, another bailout for farmers is needed, thanks to Trump's policies. But by the way, it is not like farmers were not warned about all of this after Trump's previous trade war with China during his first term. That required a huge bailout from the American taxpayers. Well, now it looks like they're going to have to get another bailout again, at least if we can believe anything from this administration. On Monday, Trump announced a $12 billion farm aid package, a boost to farmers who have struggled to sell their crops while getting hit by rising costs after the president raised tariffs on China. He unveiled the plan on Monday afternoon at the White House at a White House roundtable for this new farm bailout. The money is, of course, he said, coming from tariff revenue. That, of course, is U.S. taxpayer money that you paid. So U.S. consumers are forced to pay more for imported goods, and that money gets channeled to farmers whose livelihood have been crushed by those new, likely unlawful taxes unilaterally imposed by Donald Trump. You're paying more, and now you're bailing out farmers again. The aid AP reports today is the administration's latest effort to defend Trump's economic stewardship and answer voter angst about rising costs, even as he dismisses concerns about affordability as a Democratic hoax. Soybeans and sorghum were hit the hardest by the trade dispute with China because more than half of those crops grown in the U.S. are then exported each year, most of that harvest going to China. And when they decide they don't want to do business with the U.S. anymore, well, that's where we are. The aid is meant to help farmers who have suffered from trade wars with other nations, inflation, and other market disruptions, almost all of which were single-handedly caused by, or in the case of climate disruption, made worse by Donald Trump. Explaining why a so-called bridge payment was now necessary for farmers, they don't call it a bailout. Now they call it a bridge payment. That's fancy. Why that was necessary for farmers, the Trump Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent explained on CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday that it was, quote, because the Chinese actually used our soybean farmers as pawns in the trade negotiations.
Oh, is that the excuse they're going with?
It was the Chinese. It was the Chinese who did that.
Oh, yeah.
They used our farmers. Farmers reportedly appreciated the aid package announced on Monday, but they said it's likely only a down payment on what is actually needed. And government aid, in the meantime, doesn't solve the fundamental problems that farmers are facing of soaring costs and now uncertain markets for their crops. During Trump's first term, he gave farmers more than $22 billion in aid payments in 2019. At the start of his trade war with China at that point, and then nearly $46 billion in 2020. Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said on social media that the president, quote, wants credit for trying to fix a mess of his making. Trump's tariffs, he correctly said, are hammering our farmers, making it more expensive to grow food, and pushing farmers into bankruptcy. Farmers need markets to sell to, not a consolation prize for the ones he wrecked, said Schumer. Rebecca Wolf, a senior food policy analyst at Food and Water Watch, which is focused on food sustainability and clean water, added that the bailouts are, quote, a denigrating band-aid to farmers. She said Trump's tariff tantrum and belittling bailouts will deepen agriculture sector consolidation, funneling money to a powerful few corporations, aha, while running farmers further into the ground. Trump has also been under pressure to address soaring beef prices, which have hit record numbers for a number of reasons. Among them, demand for beef has been strong at a time when drought, yes, fueled by climate change, has cut the U.S. herds.
Climate change again.
Yep. That, while foreign beef has meanwhile become more expensive thanks to, yes, Trump's tariffs. Again, a tax on all Americans. All of us know that. So, thanks to Donald Trump, if you are able to avoid his distracting daily, hourly, minute-by-minute obnoxious idiocy and corrupt law-breaking, not to mention his violent anti-immigration policies and his war crimes, well, if you can avoid all of that, his actual policies are every single day making America worse again, more expensive, and yes, more deadly. And we got another very good example of that from last week when the Trump administration announced a new policy to make climate change worse. And your options for new vehicles fewer and the amount that you pay for gasoline much higher, higher than necessary, in the coming years. Which is what Trump's Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy described as policies that would allow American automakers to, quote, bring the 1970s station wagons back again, because that's what America is apparently clamoring for, right? Let's take a quick break, and we will be joined by Dan Becker of the Center for Biological Diversity on the Trump administration's new plan to make your air dirtier again and to help you pay a lot more for gasoline in the bargain. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the Bradcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and the Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
We got to stop now. We got to stop right now. Yeah, we got to stop right now before it be too late.
Yes, please. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Yeah, we got to stop now when it comes to climate change. We've got to do something. We've got to take action. And frankly, we have been taking action, some historic action over the past 4 years. But now Donald Trump is apparently set on reversing all of that progress. Welcome back, as I say, to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Last week in our Thursday Green News Report, I think it was, Desi Doyen reported on the Trump administration's new, if long-expected, announcement that it intends to roll back fuel efficiency standards for American cars and trucks, raising, as she noted at the time, the cost of gasoline for Americans, noting actually as Consumer Reports warned at the time. Just another way in which the Donald Trump policies are making life worse and more unaffordable for average Americans. As the New York Times reported it, quote, President Trump last Wednesday threw the weight of the federal government behind vehicles that burn gasoline rather than electric cars, gutting one of the country's most significant efforts to address climate change and thrusting the U.S. automobile industry into greater uncertainty. As AP reported on Wednesday, Trump announced a proposal to weaken vehicle mileage rules for the auto industry, loosening regulatory pressure on automakers to control pollution from gas-powered cars and trucks. The plan, if finalized next year, would significantly reduce fuel economy requirements, which set rules on how far new vehicles need to travel on a single gallon of gasoline through the 2031 model year. The administration and some automakers say the rules will increase Americans' access to the full range of gas vehicles that they need and can afford, though I am fairly certain that Americans have not had trouble finding a full range of gas vehicles up until now. If they wanted to find an electric car, well, things may be more difficult depending on where you live in these United States. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration projects that the new standards would set the industry fleet-wide average for light-duty vehicles at around 34.5 miles per gallon in the 2031 model year. That is down from the projected 50.5 miles per gallon in 2031 under the Biden-era rule. So were you hoping that the Trump administration would make cars less efficient and more expensive to use? If so, well, good news, I guess. The move is the latest action by the administration to reverse major Biden-era climate-related policies, in this case, those that encouraged cleaner-running cars and trucks and had encouraged the transition toward electric vehicles. Not an EV mandate, mind you. As Trump and now his administration have been gaslighting Americans about, but gutted what would have amounted to encouragement to move toward cleaner running, far more efficient vehicles. The move has also sparked major criticism from environmental groups. Burning gasoline for vehicles is the U.S. top contributor to planet warming greenhouse gas emissions. Quote, from day one, I've been taking action to make buying a car more affordable, Trump said at the White House last week, announcing the change to the so-called Corporate Average Fuel Economy, or CAFE, standards, reversing the Biden-era policy, which Trump claimed to have, quote, forced automakers to build cars using expensive technologies that drove up costs, drove up prices, and made the car much worse. Since taking office in January, Trump has already weakened auto tailpipe emission rules, repealed fines for automakers that do not meet federal mileage standards, and terminated consumer credits of up to $7,500 for EV purchases, making those purchases of new, clean vehicles anything but more affordable, even as Trump on Wednesday claimed that the new rule would save consumers $1,000 off the price of a new car. As long as it's not an electric car, I guess. Environmentalists decried the rollback. Gutting the gas mileage program will make cars burn more gas and families burn more cash, said Catherine Garcia of the Sierra Club's Clean Transportation for All program. She said this rollback would move the auto industry backwards, keeping polluting cars on our roads for years to come and threatening the health of millions of Americans, particularly children and the elderly. The Center for Biological Diversity's Dan Becker told AP, quote, in one stroke, Trump is worsening three of our nation's most vexing problems, the thirst for oil, high gas pump costs, and global warming. Joining us now is Dan Becker, director of the Safe Climate Transport Campaign at the Center for Biological Diversity, where he works to push for governments and automakers to clean up air pollution and climate warming emissions. Dan developed the strategy and led the fight for the Obama administration's groundbreaking program that has begun to cut in half emissions from cars, SUVs, and pickup trucks, the biggest single step any nation had taken to fight global warming at the time, a program which President Biden began to improve upon, and now Trump is rolling back because, well, this is what makes America great again, apparently, if you can see it through all the smog. Oh, Dan Becker, welcome to the broadcast, sir. I really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So, Dan, I like that, if that's the right word, I liked your quote there, cited by AP, that in one stroke, Trump is worsening three of our nation's most vexing problems, the thirst for oil, high gas pump costs, and global warming, because it really does seem to sort of do all of those things in one terrible fell swoop. Can you walk us through how each one of them sort of happens downstream from this one rulemaking decision or when it's officially enacted? How does this one regulation do all of those things as you see it?
Sure. Well, what it does is it saves gas. And by saving gas, you save money at the pump because you don't have to go fill your tank with as much gas or go as often. And when you burn less gas, you pollute less. In fact, every gallon of gas burned pumps 25 pounds of carbon dioxide pollution into the atmosphere. And we burn a lot of gallons. And so this is a major source, as you said, of global warming pollution. And the U.S., because we drive a lot more than other folks, we drive more gas guzzlers than other folks, and we drive them further and at the drop of a hat, we are the biggest auto polluter on the planet. And Trump is only going to make that much worse.
Well, now, you say that the previous program saved gas, saved money for Americans, but now Trump, newly pretending to care about affordability, claims that this measure is actually going to save American consumers money, save them about $1,000 per new vehicle. Is he wrong about that?
Yes, that number is horse hockey, as we say. It's a technical legal term.
Uh-huh.
Made up, if you read the hundreds of pages of explanation, it doesn't justify anywhere near that number. Yes. In order to cut gas consumption, automakers need to use better technology. That better technology isn't free, but it costs a fraction of the value of the gas that it saves. Mm. So spend a little on a better car that has better technology, save a lot at the gas pump, and save the planet while you're at it.
Now,
good deal, I think.
Yeah, it is a good deal. Well, it used to be. Apparently not anymore. Last year, Trump ran on the claim that he was going to overturn what he repeatedly called the Biden EV mandate. He repeated that over and over again. So did his supporters at Fox News, etc. And after taking office, his administration sycophants started doing the same thing, talking about the Biden EV mandate. But in fact, there is and never was a Biden EV mandate. Am I right about that, Dan Becker?
Yes. I mean, actually, the rule that we're talking about goes back to 1975, mm-hmm. the CAFE standards. Mm-hmm. They were adopted after the Arab oil embargo of 1973, when the United States was trying to figure out how do we avoid getting over a barrel again. And so these rules were adopted, and they've been toughened a couple of times, not mm-hmm. enough. Mm-hmm. And in fact, these rules represent the biggest single step any nation has ever taken to cut auto use of oil, mm-hmm. So save you money at the pump, cut pollution that's a result of burning that gas in your car, mm-hmm. It's really unjustifiable watch the President of the United States both tear up this very valuable protection for consumers, for the environment, cutting our dependence on foreign oil, and at the same time lie and say, oh, it's actually a good thing for you because you'll save money, because in fact it will cost you much more at the gas pump than you would save up front with a dirtier car.
Yeah, and let me talk about another lie that I think needs some debunking here. At the White House last week, making the announcement about all of this, Transportation Secretary, former MTV reality TV star Sean Duffy said that the new rule going into place are, quote, going to allow the automakers to make vehicles that Americans want to purchase, not vehicles that Joe Biden and former Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg want to build. But were the automakers ever actually prevented from making vehicles that Americans want to purchase? He said, you know, they're going to bring back the 1970s station wagon again. I mean, was there ever any rules in place, whether it was under Biden or under the Obama rules that you helped push through, that would have prevented any of these automakers from making whatever cars they wanted?
No, there's no restriction on what they make. And they do a lot of advertising, $14 to $15 billion a year of advertising to push the vehicles on which they make the biggest profit. And they make the biggest profit on gas-guzzling SUVs and pickup trucks, which is what they would much prefer to sell. But there are a couple of problems with that. One set of problems are the ones we've been discussing, more pollution, more gas guzzling, consumers paying through the nose at the gas pump. The other is that the auto companies themselves, and you talked about bailout in the previous segment about farms.
Yeah.
We bailed out the auto industry in 2008 or so when they made the wrong choices and refused to make more efficient, cleaner vehicles. When gas prices went up, they went down. And so the reality is that there are foreign manufacturers who want to make clean vehicles. And there are purchasers around the world who want to buy clean vehicles. And if General Motors and Ford and Stellantis, which is Chrysler, won't sell them, then they'll buy them from BYD, which most Americans have never heard of. It's a giant Chinese electric vehicle maker. They sold 4.37 million electric vehicles and plug-ins last year. They're selling like hotcakes in Asia, in Europe, in South America, and in Africa. But we don't buy them here. And in fact, Trump slapped 100% tariff on it to make sure that you won't buy it here.
Yep.
So the reality is that the auto companies working with Trump to create their own grave. Time was that General Motors sold 60% of the market in the United States. They owned the American auto market. Now they're down below 24%. And if they continue in this direction, BYD and other Chinese manufacturers will eat their lunch.
Well, that is what I'm wondering about. I mean, you mentioned the bailout that we had to do, what was it, about 10, 15 years ago. There was also a similar bailout of sorts in the 80s when, again, U.S. automakers were not making the cars that the world wanted to buy. Now we've got ESG Dive, a media outlet focused on sustainable investing. They're reporting that environmental groups and others are criticizing this rollback of the fuel economy standards. Because global automakers, as you cite, Chinese giant BYD, for example, and Geely have aggressively ramped up production and exports of EVs to Europe and everywhere else on the global market. Are we essentially now just cutting U.S.-made vehicles out of those markets, out from competition? And if that is the case, Dan Becker, why were there several automaker CEOs willing to show up at the White House last week with Trump lauding this move by the administration?
You know, people have talked about being addicted to oil for a long time. The reality is that the auto companies are addicted to making gas guzzlers.
Why is that? I've always wondered that. I mean, they're not the oil guy. If this was ExxonMobil, I would understand. But GM, Ford, Stellantis, they're not the oil industry per se, are they?
No, they're not. But the best, the most advertised vehicle in America is the Cadillac Escalade, which sells for about $90,000.
Yeah.
Guzzles gas prodigiously.
Yeah.
And makes General Motors, according to the Detroit News, more than $30,000 pure profit on each one sold.
Wow.
And General Motors just can't look at that and say, we're going to give that up and we're going to start looking at the new market that is the future, which is electric vehicles. They are stuck in the past, looking in the rearview mirror and polluting up the wazoo because they can't break that addiction to profitable gas guzzlers. The problem is that profit won't last forever. There will come a time when foreign manufacturers, BYD and others, will end up with so much of the market that General Motors can't effectively compete. And yeah, we could be the island in the world that continues buying GM's polluting gas guzzlers for a while. And we will, if Trump has his way, and it looks like he will. But the future of the auto industry is dependent on electric vehicles. And in fact, the head of the trade association for the auto industry said that a couple of years ago when he introduced an event with Joe Biden. But again, they're addicted to gas guzzlers and can't seem to break out of that bad habit.
Yeah, I recall, because we were, of course, we've been on this beat, Desi Doyen and myself, via our Green News Report and on the broadcast and so forth now for about two decades. And I recall I'm old enough, I guess, to remember during the Biden administration when it seemed that automakers actually wanted to improve, American automakers actually wanted to improve the CAFE standards, that they seemed to be going along with the Biden White House. What was that about? Why the change of heart? Is it really just these major company CEOs are willing to go along with whoever is in the White House because they're so dependent on them for regulatory approval? I remember the automakers saying, no, we don't want to roll back the CAFE standards. Did I hallucinate that, Dan?
No, they were talking out of both sides of their tailpipe. and they would much rather continue to make these gas guzzlers and pocket the huge profits and hope that whistle past the graveyard of foreign manufacturers seizing the market out from under them. But yes, as soon as Donald J. Trump came in and so do you remember that a year ago, April, there was a lunch that Trump had in Mar-a-Lago with a bunch of oil executives. And he said, if you guys give me $1 billion, I'll do anything you want. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the oil executives gave him not $1 billion, $445 million. Yep. So they got it wholesale. And now he's doing the whatever you want. And one of the things that the oil companies wanted was no more CAFE standards, no more efficiency standards from EPA and no more clean car standards from California, because it was eating into their sales of oil. And so the oil industry and the auto industry had a community of interest here. The auto companies wanted to make the gas guzzlers, and the oil company are perfectly happy to sell at huge prices the gas that would go into them.
Yep.
So that's what has changed. The reality is we're going to have to change Trump in order to change back to what used to be.
What of these world automakers, but certainly here in the U.S., who have invested a lot of money in sort of turning over the fleet to clean, cheaper, renewable EV electric vehicles? They've invested a lot there. Do they really want to give up the world market? And do they really want to go back to gas vehicles? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. It seems like they had already begun that transition. Why would they want to roll that back and not only eat that investment, but also essentially give up the markets around the world and, you know, give it over to China?
I think they feel strongly both ways. They would like to be able to continue making the profits on the gas guzzlers, and they would like to hope that it won't be too late by the time they're done doing that to compete effectively with the Chinese. But the reality is, in the 1970s, the Japanese did the same thing. They took 25% of the U.S. market by making more efficient, better made cars, and Americans flocked to them. And the American manufacturers were making clunkers. And the Japanese manufacturers never gave up the 25% of the market that they seized in the 1970s. The Chinese are doing the same thing. They watched that movie.
Yes.
And you can watch it too.
Yep.
But GM and Ford and Stellantis want to run the movie again. They are hoping it will come out differently this time.
I'm tired of that movie and all of its sequels. Dan Becker, very quickly, I got to get out. But can this new rule be stopped? It's introduced, I guess it's a public comment period. Or is this now a done deal? And basically, we got to wait till a Democrat takes over the White House to essentially reverse the whole thing all over again.
It looks as if it's going to be very hard to stop. The Supreme Court doesn't look likely to side with anybody but Donald Trump these days. But there are other things that we have to do. We have to get states to adopt clean car rules. And now that the federal government is basically out of the business, the states should be free and not preempted from doing so, which is what was the case when the federal government was acting. And then we also need to get cities to adopt policies that encourage people to drive less or not drive at all. We need fleets to turn over and get clean vehicles instead of gas guzzlers. So there are a bunch of things that we can do, but we're going to have to roll up our sleeves and get to work and fight Trump along the way.
Well, thank you for rolling up your sleeves and fighting for so long for this, Dan. It is important, but it looks like this is going to be a fight that's going to continue. Dan Becker is the director of the Safe Climate Transport Campaign at the Climate Law Institute of the Nonprofit Center for Biological Diversity. You can find him and them and his work on the Blue Skies at safe-climate, and you can go to safeclimatecampaign.org. Dan, really appreciate you joining us today, and thanks for all you do, sir.
Thank you for having me on.
You bet. All right, we have got to get out. My thanks to our producer, as always, the delightful Desi Doyen, to our board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can always download it for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who support our work. You can also drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there until we see you here, hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate.